No taxation without representation. 200 years of exploitation in the capital of this nation. No representation in the capital of this nation. 200 years of exploitation. Give the people their right to vote. Someone asked me, was it true? The voting rights of the district were long overdue.
That was Sweet Honey in the Rock with Give the People Their Right to Vote. Hello and welcome to Shadow Politics, an hour-long grassroots talk show which will attempt to shine a light on the issues that you care about. I'm your host, United States Senator Michael D. Brown, coming to you live from the District of Columbia, America's last colony. Along with my co-host, Kathleen Gomez, we hope our show will start a dialogue with America about the issues that are important to you and affect the lives of all of us. So join in the discussion by calling in at 888-627-6008. That's 888-627-6008. Or Skype us at BBS Radio 1. We have no guests tonight, so we're just going to talk about what's going on in the world, where we stand with the new Congress coming in, and what we want to focus on for the upcoming year. So if you have a question or a comment, please let us hear from you. Before we start, let me introduce my co-host, Kathleen Gomez, who has left the warmth of Arizona for the chill of the Midwest. Hey, Kathleen, how cold is it out there?
Oh, man, for me, it feels pretty darn cold. I think it's like 32, but it's drizzly with that like freezy kind of possible rain. You know, it's just like, and it's coming your way, I'm sure. You know,
yeah, it's just well, it's been cold way. Here for us, you know, like 19. The school's been starting late. It's so cold.
Wow.
Yeah,
it's so definitely a trip.
Yeah, starting school 2 hours late because it's been so cold. How crazy. And, you know, we're not very good with that. We had a little snow on Monday, screwed the whole city up. And tomorrow was supposed to have a rainy mix, you know, sleet and snow. So we'll see what happens. But, it's not Paradise, California. Let me just say that.
That's true. Okay. That's true. We were just talking to our, what we call Don and Doug, our hosts. And they were saying how nice it is out there. And it is beautiful in paradise. So it definitely is cold weather in the Midwest and coming out to the East. But can't believe it's, what, January the 11th already?
Yeah,
and already. The new year of 2015. And, you know, I leave Arizona, which I don't know. This is going to be one of the things I'm going to talk about in the future. But, you know, the Harvard Review did a study where Arizona was deemed to be the most corrupt state, outdoing Illinois, New Jersey, and New York.
Look,
and
Cochise
County.
And
Cochise County.
I take exception to that.
You feel insulted, huh? And Cochise County, which is where, you know, I've had my multitude of problems with the corruption and what the Democratic Party embraces down there. We've talked a lot about it. And it happens to be the most corrupt county of the most corrupt state. So it's interesting. It's very interesting to be coming back from that kind of environment for a while, you know. But I do want to talk about that later on. Maybe one Sunday we will talk about what's going on out here because, you know, what reflects out here is definitely what's going to be happening in Congress with this ultra-conservative Congress, I gather, that we'll be having in this new next year.
Well, yeah, that's one thing we want to talk about today is the new Congress and what that means. And, you know, that's very much the subject here in Washington, although people are undecided on which way it's going to go. And in Washington, D.C., of course, we have a new mayor and a bunch of new people on the council. So it's all new for us. And we don't know what's going on as far as what's going to go on. But we can be pretty sure, I think, that this is going to be an ultra-conservative Congress. Although I did see a picture, I think, on the front page of the Washington Post where Bonner was actually kissing Nancy Pelosi.
I saw that.
She didn't look particularly thrilled.
No, and he looks like he was like kind of forcing it on her, you know. Yeah. But it was interesting picture, definitely.
Yeah, yeah. Well, typical Republican guy, you know. So we'll see. We'll see what happens. We're ever hopeful that people will learn to cooperate. You know, lately I've been thinking, before we get on to talking about other things on the show tonight, I've just been thinking about Obama and how much criticism he's come under lately. And, you know, I really don't get it, I guess, because I go to the gas pump and gas out here is $2.24 a gallon. We saw it last night.
$1.89 here in Arizona. It was $1.89.
Yeah. And I paid $4.50 a gallon for gas out here. So it's about half the price it was at one time when it reached an all-time high. And the stock market is going crazy. It's almost at 8,000. It took a dip last week, but it's getting up there. Unemployment is going down.
Michael, don't you think unemployment goes down because nobody can qualify anymore to be on the list of the unemployed?
Well, I mean, it depends on the way you look at the unemployment statistics. I agree with you. And one phenomenon, and maybe we'll talk about this later in the show, I have it on our script today, is that I know more unemployed people than I've ever known before. And the thing that strikes me about that is the age group. People in their 50s and 60s. You know, it used to be unemployment hit young people.
Right.
And often it hit middle-aged people. But it didn't really hit people in their 50s and 60s. Now we're seeing a lot of it. I mean, I have, you know, I know six people personally who are unemployed.
And over 50.
And more than that who are underemployed. So I think that's a new phenomenon. And yes. I wonder what the dynamics of that is and how much things like automation have to do with that. You know, I took my son to the doctor. And we're done with the doctor appointment. I go to get in my car, and there's a sign in front of my car that says, you must pay your parking before you leave your parking space. There are no attendants. And I go back in the building and I find a little machine. I'm sure you've seen these machines. You put your $2 in or your credit card or whatever, and it validates your ticket. So I do that and I'm leaving and I'm thinking to myself, we're eliminating all these jobs. I mean, even the job of toll taker is being eliminated, right? We all have Zip passes or whatever those things are you put on your car. You don't need to stop and pay the toll anymore. You know, we're eliminating so many jobs. When I was a kid, my first real job in life was pumping gas.
Right.
I don't know if they do it in Arizona. In New Jersey, you're not allowed to pump your own gas. I think it's a great law. Look at how many thousands and thousands and thousands of jobs they eliminated, tens of thousands of jobs, by getting rid of gas pumpers.
Yeah, but that's why you guys are even paying more in taxes, why you're paying $2.34 instead of $1.89, which I understand. Okay, so I understand that argument. You know, you are going to be pay more at the pump so that you can have these jobs for these people, which is really kind of what's the argument of today's society, because everybody wants it quick, fast, and easy without any kind of conflict having to deal with another human being. So by doing that, we've eliminated those people's jobs. And where do they go? Where do they get absorbed? Because I don't, that's the key question, you know?
Well, you know, we pay for those people in the long run anyway. You know, I mean, you're right, whether they're on food stamps or some other program or some kind of government assistance, we pay for those people anyway. So, yeah, and it seems to me that the rich are getting richer and the gap is getting bigger.
Yes.
You know, the Walmart people are making billions of dollars. So I don't know what we do about that, but we got to come back to some semblance of, valuing the labor of each other, of the people in our society. You know, Pat and I were talking, my wife and I were talking about when I grew up in North New Jersey, and my grandmother, we had a place, like the A&P, that was considered a place, the milk store, they used to call it, where you went and got milk and cleaning products and stuff like that. But you bought your bread at a bakery, you bought right. your meat at a butcher, you bought your vegetables. There was a guy that had a vegetable stand, you know, yeah. you bought your fresh vegetables. None of that. You don't have that anymore, you know.
You used to buy your newspaper from the newsstand.
Yeah, you know? From the newsstand.
And that's got, because you do that at Walmart.
Yeah.
Excuse
or they
me,
deliver
but it's...
it. Or they deliver it. Or they delivered it to you, like the milkman. Remember the milkman?
Yes, the milkman. Yes, I remember him.
You'll love this because you have so many dentists in your family. But my grandmother used to say, become a dentist because that way you can be a doctor and you don't have to make house calls. You
yes.
know, when I say it to anybody under 50, they go, what's a house call? You know,
exactly.
Remember when the doctors used to come to your house?
Exactly.
You didn't have to go wait in an office and fill out 23 forms where they didn't know your name. And you know, I don't know how we get back some of that, but I think we need to find a way.
Well, I was just
if
talking.
If you're out there and you got any ideas, let us know.
We were just talking, a couple of friends of mine. And, you know, Diego has wanted to go back to shaving with the blade, you know, with
yeah.
the soap and the foam and all
yeah.
that. So I was asking them, you know, where do you find that stuff? And they go, gosh, I don't know. And then they start talking about the fact that those barbers are coming back, you know, where you get the towel and you eat the steam and they shave you and it's the whole thing. And he says they're starting to come back. So maybe it's just people starting to realize that maybe just having it fast and, you know, quick and easy where you don't have to have, you know, any contact with human beings is not what it's, you know, kind of cracked up to be. It doesn't, you know, now, I mean, I look at the meat in Walmart and I remember the meat that we used to get at the butcher, and then my mom would freeze it in those big ice lockers. You had to go down, you know, and rent an ice locker because nobody had freezers back then. You know, and it was just a whole, there were so many people, it was small businesses at their best, you know,
right.
working. And now we've really done such harm to the small business community
yes.
in all these, you know, big boxes that, you know, and they're really what carry the society through are these guys that do, you know, the small businesses, you know, selling batteries and newspapers and, you know, produce.
75% of all jobs,
75%
of all new jobs come to small business. And you and I know because we stood on the steps of the Wilson building together and we protested. There's a law in the district that a certain amount of money has to be given to small businesses. And over the course of 3 years, it came to $1 billion. And they found out that only or $1.2 billion. And they found out that only $200 million had been given to small businesses. So, we went to a rally called Where's the $1 billion?
Right.
And, you know, that's a real problem, too, is because large businesses can do things that small businesses can't do. They can lobby. You know, your average grocery store is not going to kick in a few thousand dollars to your political campaign, and they're not going to send Harvard-educated lawyers down to try to twist your arm and get you to do things their way. But certainly big businesses can afford to do that, and they do it a lot. They spend a lot of money, right? We
yes.
saw all the money that flowed into the DNC while we were there.
Yes.
You know, these guys are not – unions are not giving the Democratic Party tens of millions of dollars just because they're nice guys. They expect something in return. And businesses are not giving the Republican Party – and the Democratic Party, just to be honest with it, millions of dollars because they're nice guys. They expect something in return. And they get something in return. They get a lot in return. And we got to figure out a way around that.
Well, let's talk about what the statehood strategy is going to be
as we
go into 2015.
You know, I mean, you and I talk about this a lot. And we've already seen that there doesn't seem to be a change coming because earlier this week, or we went on Monday, On Monday, we went to, I went up to Capitol Hill, where our brand new mayor and our delegate, Eleanor Holmes Norton, asked for her vote back in committee. You know, she used to have this ceremonial vote. She actually used it quite effectively at times, but basically she had a vote in committee, has no floor vote, but had a vote in committee. Of course, if that vote resulted in a tie or breaking a tie, it didn't count. So it was, you know, it was more ceremonial than it was substantive. But the Republicans, every time they come into Congress, take it away from her. The Democrats give it back to her. So she went up and she made a plea to get her vote back. And, of course, when the vote was taken on Tuesday, all the Democrats signed on to give her her vote back, and all the Republicans said no. So, you know, so it didn't carry, of course. But so it looks like more of the same old for the district anyway. You know that if you're a regular listener of the show, you know that Adam Eidegger was on last week and the week before, because we played a repeat of 2 weeks ago. We played that last week, and we talked about the marijuana initiative. That's another thing that's under attack. We passed a law in the District of Columbia, but Congress says it's not going to – they're not going to let it happen. So I think our strategy this year for us is going to be to hit Congress hard as we can, but also go after the city council, who's not funding us and is trying to hold us back. You know, that the new mayor has talked about developing a new relationship with Congress where they get along and they go along, and, you know, but that seems to me to be a mistake. You know, it's the same approach basically that we've used for 212 years, and it's never resulted in anything good. Well, we got home rule 40 years ago, but we've never actually been treated like equal citizens, and we keep on going back up there with our hat in our hands. And it's time, as far as I'm concerned, to stop that nonsense and to go up there and demand the rights that are ours.
Well, you know, I don't get it, because they're spending at least probably $200,000, I would say, on a lobbyist, right? They're going to hire a new lobbyist to represent
the city. No. My feeling is they're going to spend millions. Because there's going to be a whole office and a staff, and yeah. I mean, I think they're going to spend millions on kissing up to Congress. You know, I mean, I think that's a lovely, lovely title. That's what we should call that plan, the kissing up to Congress plan. And I don't think it's going to get us anywhere. You know, my personal experience with bullies, I have a lot of experience with bullies. First of all, I grew up in North New Jersey. And then second of all, Kathleen Gomez and my wife have teamed up together to try to make a better man out of me.
You're such a whiner.
So I get bullied a lot. And I found that the only way to deal with a bully, you know, being honest, is to stand up to them. They don't respond to you being kind and, you know, generous and wanting to work with them. Really, the only way I think you can deal with them effectively is to stand up to them. And that's what Frederick Douglass said. He said that power concedes nothing without a demand, never did, never will. And I believe that's the absolute truth, that you need to make a demand rather than go up there and say, let's see what we can work out with these guys, because they don't want to work anything
out. I know that it must be just a real simple issue, such as they just don't want to give up power. And that's why they don't give the respect to the office of the delegation, because you did get, you know, elected by 207,000 votes on your last run. And it is something that is paid for. It's, you know, it's in your charter. And so why do they not support it? I mean, you know, this is the problem with politics, whether you're in Washington, D.C., Douglas, Arizona, or, you know, Kansas City or Timbuktu, and in between, is that it's, you know, you have these laws and people decide that they're just not going to enforce them. Well, then why have it on the books? You know, why laws that you have absolutely no intention of carrying through?
Well, that's true. And it's one of the oldest political dodges, you know, and that's where you get sayings like the devil's in the details, because it really doesn't make much of a difference what the law is, as much as it does how the law is implemented. And, you know, what you're talking about with us is the city council, and that's phase two of what we're going to do this year. We're going after the city council and the mayor, and we're going to say, fund us. But when the office was created by the people, my office, we were supposed to be paid what a United States congressman is paid, which today is about $160,000, I think. Mm-hmm. About $160,000. We're paid nothing. We're supposed to be funded through a thing called the Statehood Commission for more than $1 million, and that was $1 million in 1980s. So today, that would early 1990s. So that today would be several million dollars. They're funding us for a couple hundred thousand dollars, most of which they're going to give to an administrator. So yeah, they're playing this shell game in City Hall where they're saying, we want to make it look like we're doing something for you, but we're not actually interested in doing anything for you. And that's got to stop. You know, we're gonna go after City Hall as well as the Congress, because this is something that people want. We really don't give a damn if the mayor and the city council want it. This is what the voters of the District of Columbia want. And we're going to make it happen. Me,
yes,
and Kathleen Gomez and like 16 crazy people that
yes.
live in the District of Columbia. We're going to get together and
push it through.
Now, on the good news side, and there's very little good news, but we did get over 130 co-sponsors on the New Columbia Admissions Act in the last Congress. My understanding is the act will be reintroduced probably this week. And, you know, so we're making a little ground. Of course, every one of them was a Democrat. We didn't have one Republican. So we really need to change that. And Chris Kors, who's the senator from Delaware, Senator Carper's colleague, who's also a Democrat, is in charge of the subcommittee in the Senate that deals with funding for D.C., and that's good news because he's a co-signer of the New Columbia Admission Act. So we're happy to see him in a position of power with the District of Columbia. I mean, if you're going to be slaves, you might as well, you know, have the massa might as well be somebody that likes you, you know, as much as that can be. But it doesn't change things. You know, the fact that he might be a little nicer to us, a little more interested in our causes, he's already made a statement saying that, doesn't change the fact that these guys still get to decide what we get to do, how we get to spend our money, and that's wrong. It flies in the face of everything that this democracy stands for. That's the really, really tough part, too, when you're out there, is you keep on thinking to yourself, you know, didn't I study this in high school and in college? Didn't I study that you can't have taxation without representation, that you can't ask people to serve in the military and then not honor them? It just seems so fundamentally wrong that I'm not sure why everybody doesn't get it, but they don't.
It's just – so you guys pay property taxes. You don't have an income tax, right?
No, we do have income tax.
What do you mean you have an income tax? How can you have an income tax?
We have every tax. We have every tax you have.
Well, how do you have a state income tax if you're not a state? What, do you have a district?
We have a city. Yeah, 8.5%, man.
That's federal taxes on your
– No, that's
sales tax.
That's state tax. That's city tax, 8.5%. And then regular federal income taxes. Oh, hell yeah. We pay more taxes in the district than any other place, which is even, you know, adds to the irony of the whole thing, is that we pay more taxes than you do in Arizona, and we have nobody to Representatives.
Well, I would say there's not anyone representing most of Arizonans either. But anyway, that's another discussion. But that is terrible. I don't know how Republicans cannot support this issue based on what they believe in, which is states' rights. You know,
right.
to be able to decide what you're doing in the future, because they're just talking about that with. You know, the gas tax, they're all talking now about having a gas tax increase, right? Because it's so
right.
low. And then they want the cities to do some, I mean, the states to be in charge of, maybe was it something to do with the gas increase or something and monitoring. But they want the states to have a bigger role and they want them to have self-determination. So why can't they see that that's what they should be doing for the people who live in the district? I'm not sure how it falls. Their platform just falls apart when it comes to DC and getting states' rights. It's like they don't believe anything that is so part of their true platform.
Well, that's absolutely right.
It's hypocrisy at its finest, I guess.
At its finest, right. And we say that to them all the time. In fact, last year, or the year before, actually, they wanted to put in a bill for we put in a bill for legal autonomy, because in the district, our laws have to be approved. And what we called it was something like the District of Columbia Paper Reduction Act, because, you know, they're always talking about how they want to get your how they want to get the federal government out of your business. So,
right.
you know, we're saying, yeah, that's the thing here in D.C. We want to get you out of our business. And that's one of their primary things, too. And, you know, but when it comes to us, they ignore that. So I don't know that our strategy is going to be much different, except we're going to spend more time getting on the back of the city council
yes.
and the mayor's office saying, look, this is something we have to do. And we got to fire up the people in the District of Columbia to get it done. And to do that, we need some support. So that's going to be.
And I think also it's going to think outside of the box and not let the limitations of City Hall hold you back, because what can they do? They can't fire you and they can't cut your salary. So,
no, I can't cut my salary.
You know, and so I think it's time to really make some noise. And if anything, you go out, have made, you know, banging the drum, as they say, you know, for statehood. And I think now there seems to be a lot of momentum for it. So we're going to go outside the box. We're going to reach out to people who haven't been reached out or touched yet on the issue, but believe in it. And I think we'll get things going. And we need the support out there of our audience in other states.
That's right.
And, you know, anybody who's listening. So please get ready, because we're going to have to ask for your help to get the pressure, build the pressure up so these people do the right thing.
That's right. And you know, this is one of the last great civil rights struggles in America. When the country was founded, women didn't have the right to vote. African Americans didn't have the right to vote. People that didn't own property didn't have the right to vote. Native Americans didn't have a right to vote. People under 21 didn't have a right to vote. We've changed all that, except for the people in the District of Columbia, and that needs to change, and we need to do it soon.
Yes.
Well, that being said, let's talk a little bit about what's going on in the world. The world is getting to be a crazier and crazier place, huh?
Well, should we take a break? Should we take a break before we get into the intensity of what's happening in the world? Because it's not good.
Well, it isn't good, but I'll tell you, okay, let's take a break. We're going to take a longer than usual break to play a song that needs to be played. It would make more sense after this discussion, but I think you're
wrong. Oh, okay. Sorry
what's
about
happened,
that.
Well, that's all right. Well, you know, this is a song that was written in the 1980s by Michael Jackson, a bunch of people called USAID for Africa, called We Are the World. And I think you should listen closely to it and understand, you know, listen to the words. And we could all take a lesson from this song. And I want this to go out to the brave young man from the kosher market in Paris, who hid, did you hear about this, Kathleen?
No.
He hid 15 people in a freezer so that the terrorists couldn't get to him. Wow. And he was a Muslim. And he was a Muslim. And after all of it was over, he said, "It makes no difference if you're Muslim, Christian, or Jew. We're all in this together." So let's try to remember that we're all in this together, and we'll be back in a few minutes.
There comes a time when we heed a certain call, when the world must come together as one. There are people dying. Oh, when it's time to lend a hand to life, the greatest gift of all. We can go on pretending day by day that someone somewhere will soon make a change.
I hope we all took a message from that song. You know, I don't know what's happened to that sentiment of 20 years ago, but this young man who saved those people in the kosher market said it best. It doesn't matter what religion you are. It doesn't matter how much money you make. It doesn't matter what sex you are or race you are. We are all in this together. We're captured in a moment of time where we all have to work together to make this a better place for all of us. And murdering people in the streets of Paris is not the way to do it. What cowards these people are. They really
unbelievable.
Are.
That's something that's very hard. It does nothing for their cause. That is for sure.
Does nothing for their cause.
And I think that a lot of sentiment now has reached a point where, you know, they're not going to want the Muslims to come into your communities because they don't assimilate. It is a different community.
Right.
And so that the guys who are the ultra, you know, right wing, whatever, terrorists can hide among those cultures because they don't assimilate. So it is going to be tough. It's a tough thing. I mean, it's very hard, you know, not to have a certain sentiment, you know, when it comes to this kind of stuff.
Well, that's right. It turns people against Muslims and gives Muslims a bad name. And, you know, 3 million people got together in Paris today. 3 million came out in support of solidarity for the country and to stand together. And I think that's amazing. And I commend those people. And, you know, I'm sure many of them were Muslim. Yeah, these guys, they're like fundamentalists. It's yes. about being a fundamentalist. You know, we have the same thing in this country. We have those Christians that show up at the funerals of military personnel and scream, God loves dead soldiers because we allow.
But, you know, in all fairness, too, as a woman, let me tell you, it also concerns me about the Muslims in our culture. You know, there are, and I know good Muslim families, but for instance, there's the Muslim center is right next to these three ultra-modern luxury apartments that they have for college students. And I was parking the car, and some four young men, probably in their 20s, were going in the alleyway, and I was behind them, and they weren't going to move from me. I mean, it's a difference in a culture and a difference on how they treat women. And I know this is probably not the political correct thing for me to say, but I noticed it very well. When I was sitting there, like, saying to these guys, can you get out of my way? They had no desire to do it. I mean, it was an attitude towards women. I mean, you know, there's so many layers to so much. Nothing is black and white. And it's kind of like you have to take a look at it, the reality of it, too. When you come to America, you're embracing American culture, right? That's why you immigrate, why you want to be an American, because you want to embrace what it stands for. It's hard for me, you know, being on the Mexican border, to see people come in. They want the freedom of America, but they don't necessarily want to assimilate into it. That's what made us such a success, because we had, a melting pot where people did melt it, not always successfully, because that's not human nature. But I don't see the assimilation even in the Latin American community that I once did. Like, my grandparents couldn't wait to assimilate into American culture.
Well, that's true. I mean, and there's an upside and a downside to that. I grew up with my Italian grandparents. I don't speak a word of Italian because of that sentiment. My grandmother was blonde haired and blue eyed, and she wanted to assimilate. And she would say, if my grandfather tried to speak to her in Italian, she'd go, "I don't understand what you're saying. Speak to me in English. I'm an American." Mm-hmm. You know, and so there was that sentiment. We lost part of our culture, which I feel bad about. I wish I could speak Italian. You know, it would have made me so much cooler when I was a young guy trying to pick up girls. You know, if I could have. Yeah, I didn't do very well in English, but I know I would have done great in Italian. But anyway, seriously, I mean, there's an upside and a downside to it. But yeah, there's a desire to the one of the upside things I think is what you're talking about, that there was a desire to belong, and we need to belong, and you know, it seems to me that this is getting harder and harder with technology. You know, now I hope that what the internet is doing is making the world a smaller place. And I think it is. And we're starting to understand each other more. And I think maybe more understanding will come from our interaction, because a lot of the hate and rancor that goes on in the world is due to ignorance, just that we don't know each other. But in addition, we also don't interact with each other anymore. Look at our kids. I mean, my kids text.
I know. Text each other at the table. I know. Might do that too. And let me say this to the audience. We can't see your face. When we say Skype us, it's not like you're going to see, we're going to see your face. You can just type in a question. So don't forget us at 888-627-6008. I know a lot of chickens, you know, that say, "Oh, I'm going to call. And then they don't call because I don't know what they're afraid of. But I sure know a lot of chickens that don't want to call in.
I think it's you. It can't possibly be me.
It can't possibly be me.
No, it can't possibly be me. I think it's you. I think they're afraid of you. I was afraid of you for a long time. And I realized your bark was worse than your bite.
I have two friends out there, you know, talk about technology, right? Yeah. I had lost contact with a young man. He's not young anymore. He turned 60 when I was 17 because, you know, I went to the East, he went to the West, and, you know, phone calls, long distance was very expensive and didn't necessarily mean you would be at a place where you can make long distance phone calls, remember? Because sometimes you didn't have that connection.
Yeah. And I remember your parents used to yell at you.
Yes.
When you talk to your grandmother or something, they'd go, "It's long distance. Now don't hang on the phone." You know?
Exactly.
Like, say, "I love you, Grandma," and get the hell off. Yeah.
And then remember, was it too long ago when you could call after certain hours and it was cheaper, right? But back in those days, it was letter writing or if you could get long distance. And so we lost contact and got back in touch with each other after 38 years. And so he lives in Kansas. Now, you know Michael Marcianti. He was Mateo, my other son's godfather, and he lived in Connecticut. And we were very close for 20-some odd years. When I moved to New York, he was one of my best friends. And when I moved back to Arizona, even though he came out for my 50th birthday, we kind of lost touch with each other. Well, guess who's living in Kansas City? Michael Marcianti. And they're only living like 10, 15 minutes away from each other. So life is very strange, you know. It's kind of sometimes the connections and, you know, where you cross people at certain times in your life is very interesting. So, yes, the internet is a whole another monster in a lot of ways. But
And it's good in essence, too. I mean, I've reconnected, right? We all have on Facebook.
Yes.
I now talk to girls that I went to high school with, 40 years ago, and guys that I went to high school with. And I talk to, friends I haven't seen in years. I got an email through Facebook from my assistant when I was ran the Center on Budget and Policy Priorities. Her child is at Johns Hopkins. I mean, we hung out together. We knew each other. We worked together. When the two of us didn't even have significant others in our lives. Now we both have kids in college. So it's been great to reconnect with through Facebook and through other stuff with people. But I think that unfortunately a lot of young people are losing their skills to, you know, have to deal with each other. Exactly. You know, it's like when you watch little kids playing and there's some kind of dispute, you know, there's that age. Maybe you're not so familiar with this because you had boys, but there's an age at which girls start to, you know, glam together, and you know, they hook up with other girls, and they can be mean to the kid that's left on the outside. And this is, I forget what grade this is, like third or fourth grade. And, you know, there's all of these hurt feelings and stuff, so because some kids get left out. But you know what you do is you put them in a room and you have them work it out. You don't, right. You know what I mean? And they don't work it out anymore. They just go. And I think that's what happens, unfortunately, sometimes to these poor, depressed kids that have mental problems that end up going back to their school with a gun and shooting a bunch of people. Look at this guy. There's another guy gunman, 29 years old, in Idaho that yesterday killed his stepfather, his landlord, and a manager of a restaurant that he used to frequent. He just drove around with a gun and shot and killed all three of them.
You know what happened here in Kansas City, which was really interesting? Four guys went into a gun shop to rob it. And, you know, I don't know what they were thinking, but, you know, the owner killed two of them. Wounded the other one, but got shot. He died protecting his wife because she wasn't armed. But, you know, what makes you think you can go in and just shoot it out at a gun person's, you know, gun owner's store, gun shop, and there's not going to be some kind of guys ready to fight back? I mean, I don't know.
Well, yeah, I wouldn't want to, if I was robbing something, I wouldn't be robbing a gun store. Not the smartest, criminals, you know. They're some criminals are very, very, well, they're just like everybody else, you know. Some are very smart, some are not smart. They used to have a show on in Washington, D.C. on the radio called Crooks Are Dumb, where they would talk about, you know, the guy went to rob the bank, but then his car ran out of gas. Or, you know, there was another one where a guy gave a note to a bank teller to rob the Riggs Bank across from the FBI building in D.C. And he had a toy gun, and it was payday at the FBI Friday. So when he turned around, everybody in the bank had a gun but him. There were like, you know, 20 people. But my favorite of all times was a guy from Oklahoma. He robbed a 7-Eleven. And when he fired his lawyer during the trial, and the judge said that he was doing a very good job representing himself until the lady that he robbed at the 7-Eleven identified him, and he jumped up at the defense table and said, "I should have blown your head off when I had the chance." And then he thought about it and he said, "If I had been there, of course." And he sat down. Only took 5 minutes to find him guilty. So, you know, it takes all types. But, yeah, it's That's something else. You know, we're going to talk about what's coming up in the coming year. But, you know, gun control is another thing. You know, there's got to be – it's just crazy to me that there should be no – and I know we disagree on this a little bit, but that there should be no controls on weapons. I mean, we have controls on everything in our society. You can't even own a car unless it's insured. And why is that? It's because of the potential danger, because of the damage you can do with a car. So why is a gun so much different? There's so much potential damage that can be done with a gun. There's so much, you know, if they had to be insured, for example, gun owners would be more responsible.
I think. Yes, we have talked
about
that.
Background checks, you know, things like that, simple things. Not saying that nobody can own a gun, but you know, background checks. And I don't know. I'm determined. This is my New Year's resolution, and I make it on the air so that everybody can hear it. But I'm going to try to get a gun rights person on our show this year. We have been unable to get somebody that believes in unlimited gun ownership, somebody from the National Rifle Association.
Well, you can't put it that way. That's the problem. You can't. I mean, I think we're looking for someone who can explain why they believe that everyone should be able to get a gun without any bother, without, you know, having any kind of restrictions. Because I think they just don't want to think they're going to go on a show where we're going to be, you know, temperamental and argumentative, and we won't. And we've had people who are very different than what we think our thinking is. And, you know, we've ended up to find some kind of common ground. So, you know, and you and I have had some heated discussions about this on who should own a gun. And I'm very much a believer that it has to be regional. You have to look upon where you're living and have laws that really will be beneficial to whether you're on a ranch in the middle of nowhere or you're in an urban community like New York or Boston or Washington, D.C. I don't think everyone should have a gun just because they want one.
Well, and just let me tell you, after the many discussions that you and I have had, the Browns have installed a metal detector for your next visit. You'll be, you know, you'll have to take your shoes off before you come in and pass
don't worry.
Through the scanner.
I'm just going to bring diseases. I tell you, I have to apologize because I was on the plane yesterday and everybody was sneezing and coughing. It was like, oh, it was just, I felt like I was through in a petri dish. And then, of course, I had seen something that Fox had done, like the trays when they, you know, they come out down the seats and got like so much staph infections on them. Like it's, you know, and I was just, and it's amazing. I was drinking water and I was trying, I should have had a mask on, but that's what I'll just do. I'll just bring some, you know, disease that I picked up in the airport.
Well, I know
all
exactly
the other diseases.
I went when I broke my foot one time. I broke my foot ice skating about this time of year, and they wheeled me into the emergency room. And I was, you know, it wasn't a high priority because I had a fractured foot. It wasn't, you know, it wasn't any like real distress. So I sat there for 2 hours, and everybody around me had the flu. I mean, everybody. And I could just see the germs walking across the floor, you know. And sure enough, Patty and I still laugh about this because she had the flu and I got the flu. And we went through 2 days where we had our kids running around the house and we weren't even sure where they were. They were like, you know, 4 and 2.
Oh,
and every
God.
Once in a while we'd roll out of bed and we'd go, you know, we'd fix them something to eat and then we'd go back to bed and, you know, but thank God they survived. So I know that feeling. And being on a plane, being caught on a plane, yeah, that's tough.
I tell you. It's just amazing. Yeah. So I do have the sniffles and I apologize. But, you know, the other thing I think that's of importance, too, is the ERA amendment. I mean, we still haven't passed that. That should have to go up for an extension yet again, right?
Yeah.
Isn't it coming up?
Right. So we'll have her back on the show. And that's a good segue to talk about some things that we're going to talk about, continue to talk about this year. An equal rights amendment is certainly one thing. We'll invite that lady Caroline back on the show. She's reintroduced the legislation. She really is a marvel in that sense that she's gotten it reintroduced in every Congress. We're going to talk about guns. You know, like I say, we hope we get gun advocates as well as gun control people on. We want to talk, of course, about D.C. statehood. That's the centerpiece of what we do. But also border security, college loans. These are all things that we discussed. And I know college loans is a big thing for you.
Well, yes. And did you see that Obama was in Arizona when he announced his, for the first 2 years, you know, kids should get their education free at community colleges, which is, you know, Canada does that. The first 2 years actually can go anywhere in Canada and you get your first 2 years free.
Well, maybe that's the first thing. Maybe we invite Dr. Brown back to discuss to discuss how he feels about that, because you know what, you can't even get into his community college. And as well, and as you well know, I started at a community college. I put myself through college. I had no money, and a community college made all the difference to me. And you know, when people say, "What university did you graduate from?" I graduated from the University of Maryland. And that's what's on my resume, not where I went to community college, but community college gave me a great foundation, and you know, it was affordable.
Right.
I mean, I could pay for it myself, and that's the big thing. My daughter Trisha's tuition and room and board is more is $40,000 a year. Now, there's no way you can convince me that if you're talking about job training, that $160,000 and 4 years of her life is worth what a bachelor's degree is worth these days. I think it's way overpriced. You know, when I talk to my kids all the time about how I worked my way through college, but the truth of the matter is it cost me less than $2,000 a year, less than $2,000 a year. I got out of college with a debt of you know, $3,000. Wow. Kids today are getting out of college with $50,000-$60,000 in debt. I mean, well, it's terrible. You know, it's a terrible way to start a life.
And it's interesting because, you know, I was talking to a young friend of my son's, you know, he's junior at U of A. And I was saying, well, where do you think you're going to end up? And he goes, well, I won't be able to live in any of the cities I like because its cost of living is too high. I'll probably have to move out to somewhere like, you know, Nebraska or Iowa or Kansas because I won't, you know, he already knows he can't get his foot in the door of a New York, D.C., L.A., San Francisco, Chicago, those kind of places. And that's sad. And the other thing I think we have to talk about when we talk about border security, and I'm going to be raising this issue a lot because nobody else is doing it, is the problems with the health along the border, the Mexican border. As you will know, I've told you that my son, Diego, had a job working at the what we call the poor person's, you know, hospital, St. Mary's, where he contracted tuberculosis. Yeah. Tuberculosis and the whooping cough and a form of polio is coming back into the United States, where we had basically whooping cough and tuberculosis were diseases of the past. Well, they are now the disease of today, because as I was talking to my brother-in-law, who was a supervisor of border security, he says people don't realize that the border security patrol guys, how now they are getting faced with these diseases that, you know, we never had to deal with. Whooping cough, he had that. Tuberculosis, you know, other diseases that are coming across the border. And now with the way the health system is and that they can go to hospitals to get treatment, not worried about getting kicked out, they're all flooding the hospitals. Now my son, 2 weeks of really intense drugs that left his immune system, you know, at nothing. So he's been sick with a cold, and it'll probably be 4 or 5 months before he'll be back where he was. He'll never be able to give blood. You know, there's a lot of things that he has to be on the lookout now. And, you know, there's really nothing for him as far as payment because he can't work for another 4 months. So, you know, yeah. I mean, it was in his plan to leave. Those are the kinds of things that politicians are not talking about, the issues of our health and safety along the Mexican border. And it's a very, very serious issue. So that is something I definitely want to also get into.
Well, and then last but not least, I think that, you know, we'll spend some time talking about, are you ready for Hillary? Who's going to be the 2016 presidential nominee for both parties? Probably seen this week that Mitt Romney and Jeb Bush are going at it in preliminary stages, and so far I don't think many Democrats have emerged. Hillary Clinton, but that's about it. And it should be an interesting year. I'm sure some strong candidates will emerge on both sides, but we should have an interesting year. Folks, I hope that you'll stick with us and listen to the show and call in and Skype in and give us your opinions, because it's important that we talk. We need to talk to each other. So, Kathleen, I'm going to give you the last word, as usual.
Yes. I should really mount that on the wall. I'm going to click my ruby shoes 3 times, and I'll see you in D.C. pretty soon. And I guess our next show will be in D.C. And I look forward to coming out there. And thank you to the audience. And, you know, 2015, we're just starting out. There's a lot of things that can happen. Hopefully we'll have good things to cheer about when we sit there and reflect on what 2015 brought us.
Yeah, thanks, America. And I'm not saying, you know, don't take this personally, Kathleen, but while you're in Kansas, watch out for little girls in flying houses.
I definitely will, and witches. No kidding. I'll be on the lookout for those. There's a lot of them in D.C., but I'll look for them here, too. All right. Thanks so much. Give the people their right to vote. Give the people their right to vote. Give the people their right to vote. Give the people their right to vote.